and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. In this episode, we're tackling a topic that's seldom even discussed, but which I think deserves a much closer look, and that is the subject of circumcision. Unlike most of the world, male infant circumcision is a routine practice in America, often done without much discussion, let alone consent, by its victims. But what if we started asking some critical questions, such as, what are the medical benefits, if any? What are the risks and the ethical considerations? And how does this practice shape our understanding of bodily autonomy and human rights? These are deep questions, and today we will explore them and the history of circumcision in the United States, the growing movement toward informed choice, as highlighted by a conference coming up next weekend, and what change could look like in the future. Today on Pathways, our guest is Eric Klopper, president of Intact Global, an organization dedicated to education, advocacy, and protecting bodily integrity. Eric is the lead trial attorney at the Klopper Law Firm in Los Angeles and the president of Intact Global, a nonprofit dedicated to ending child genital cutting in the U.S. through strategic impact litigation. Intact Global will host an inaugural conference in Portland next weekend on March 29th, 2025, culminating in a press conference on March 31st at Pioneer Courthouse Square to announce the filing of its first constitutional challenge in Oregon to protect Oregon boys from circumcision and other forms of genital mutilation. Well, hello, Eric, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
That was quite the introduction. Thank you, Paulo. I'm very happy to be here. Yeah, and we're very excited. So as you mentioned, I'm the president of the nonprofit Intact Global, and our mission at Intact Global is to ensure that every child is protected from medically unnecessary genital cutting at birth. Because as you alluded to in your introduction, America is really one of the last nations on the planet who routinely cuts off large portions of our children's genitals at birth. And, you know, the act itself violates bodily autonomy. It damages the infant immediately. You could actually measure the stress hormones, as, you know, this is the most sensitive part of the male anatomy, is removed, oftentimes without anesthesia, because these are infants, right? So they don't file a complaint afterwards. But there's been a huge body of research on circumcision, only male, not female, because people would decry the thought of doing any type of experiment or study when it harms female infants. But the reality is this harms male infants. And so that should be the end of the analysis, right? Is it harms children, but then it also removes this body part that's very functional for the rest of their life.
Okay, let's define circumcision just in case somebody doesn't fully understand what we're talking about. And we are focused on male circumcision here because female circumcision has been banned by the United States for quite some time. So what is male, how would you define male circumcision?
Okay, great question. So male circumcision, every man who's born is typically born with a penis, right? And part of the penis, it is the foreskin. So that is the part of the penis that covers the head, the glands, as they're called in medical terminology, which right. is Latin acorn, right? The head of the penis. There's a two-layer, let's say about 15 square inches, about the size of a credit card to the size of an index card, of tissue that is densely innervated. And what it does is it's where most of the sensory tissue is, and it's where all the mobile skin, the moving skin on the penis is. Now, what we do in America is we strap babies to what are called circumstraint boards. So literally, like, tie them up, and then we attach this apparatus that literally crushes the most sensitive part of their body, thousands of pounds of force, and then we sever that crushed erogenous tissue with a scalpel. And we've done that to maybe 70% of men in this country. Now, Oregon is unique in that its circumcision rates, according to my paralegal, it's good research, apparently were about 25% 10 years ago, the circumcision rate, where it's like, you know, 70%+ in other states. So Oregon is already kind of at the forefront of moving away from this type of violence against infants and newborns, right? So what we're doing in the immediate future, March 31st, is we're actually suing the state of Oregon, giving the state the opportunity to fix its discriminatory statutory scheme on genital cutting of infants. Because Oregon, like most states, they all have their own state constitution, and Oregon's state constitution prohibits discriminating protections on the basis of sex. Well, if you have a law, like you do in Oregon, where you can only protect one class, one sex of children from the harm of genital cutting, but you exclude baby boys and intersex children from that similar harm of having parts of their genitals cut off at birth, well, that law would discriminate on the basis of sex and thus be unconstitutional. And you can challenge unconstitutional laws in state courts. And so that's what we'll be doing in the immediate future.
That's exciting. And that's what your conference is helping support. But how did circumcision ever get started? You must know a lot about the history of it. It precedes the Jews. The Jews have made it famous, but as far in America. But I mean, how on earth did we ever start doing this?
Well, you know, I'm Jewish as well, but you know, we're just talking about secular circumcision. Why did America do it, right? Because it's not a Jewish nation predominantly.
I'm curious about going way back. Why did anybody do it?
Well, when the Jews started circumcising or cutting their kids' genitals, it was actually progressive at the time. I'm talking like 10,000 BC, because at the time there was child sacrifice. So ancient peoples would literally kill one or multiple of their children to try to appease their gods of, you know, probably rain, right? Say, come on, we've got three kids, we'll kill one of them, we'll give them to the gods, and maybe God will permit more rain and we'll have more crops. That was kind of the reasoning, right? You sacrifice to God your child. And what the Jews did, instead of actually killing children, they just mutilated their sex organs, right? So it's like, hey, we're not going to kill the child, we're just going to cut off an important part of him, right? So, you know, obviously, well, we may understand, a lot of viewers or listeners may understand that, look, it's barbaric to cut off a part of a child's body, let alone their sex organ. At the time the Jewish people adopted it, it was actually more progressive than the child sacrifice that preceded it. But as long as circumcision continues, we remain in the child sacrifice timeline of humanity, right? And I truly believe, and Oregon is the first step, but we have a bunch of steps to go, we could actually exit the child sacrifice timeline by protecting children from genital mutilation and genital cutting. But, you know, it's going to require some moving force, and that's what we're bringing to Portland next weekend.
You know, I think it's interesting that there's, you know, like total opposition in the West to female circumcision, you know, which to me seems kind of interesting analogy to male circumcision, in that female circumcision removes what might be considered the masculine aspects of the genitalia, whereas male circumcision removes the feminine aspect of the genitalia, the sheath. So it's like an anti-sexual thing in a way, it seems.
Well, there's African tribes who believe that let's say child sacrifice and Judaism came from African tribes. There are African tribes that believe, okay, well, the foreskin is the feminine part of the body, so we remove that.
Right.
And clitoris is the male part of the body, we remove that. And then you find your other sex when you're older, which is, I mean, it's biological and medical nonsense, but these are ancient lore that has been around for a while.
It's amazing. So yeah. Judging by your website, you guys have quite a few contributing staff members. You know, tell what is the story of, how did you organize this?
Well, I've been in we're called intactivists, right? We're activists for children with intact bodies. We're not trying to cut off parts of their bodies, we want to protect children. And I've been in this intactivist movement for, you know, 15, maybe 14 years. I'm 32. So when I was 18, I was like, oh my God, everything they told us about circumcision was a lie. Which was not a lot. It was just like memes, like, oh, it's cleaner and healthier, but without anything substantiating
Right.
So, you know, since I was maybe 18 or 19, I discovered, oh my God, what my culture told me was not true. And then I got, like, you know, actively, you know, I was an activist from 20, 21 years old onward. So I've been in this space for a long time. So I know a lot of people. They've kind of seen me grow throughout the last 10, 12 years. And now I have, you know, I've rocking and rolling civil litigation firm, and we're doing really well. And now we're ready to sue states, and people are activated and ready. The culture, we believe, is ready to address this problem as well. I mean, Oregon's a good place to start. So when I said, look, we're going to sue the state of Oregon, it's going to be our first constitutional challenge, but it won't be our last. And I want you to come and present or support. I was able to get, oh, we were able to get 11 attorneys to present. Right now, we've got 9 confirmed, actually 10 confirmed, 11 maybe. And we've got about 4 or 5 other leaders of influential nonprofits. So we've got the executive director of Intaction, which is doing lobbying in New Hampshire to defund circumcision for Medicaid. We've got the executive director of Galdef, which supports other types of lawsuits to stop genital cutting. We've got the executive director of Doctors Opposing Circumcision. We've got one of my good friends who's a human rights attorney in Uganda, Michael Abanika, who's got a whole network of human rights activists and attorneys throughout Africa, because we want to start building our network of activists and attorneys internationally, because my law firm can write amicus briefs on behalf of his litigation to protect children in Africa and vice versa. Because we have to remember in America, and Oregon's an outlier because they don't mutilate most of their children. They protect most of their children already. But in other states in the United States, oftentimes more than half of baby boys have about 50% of the skin on their penis removed, right? And most of the sensory tissue. So it's actually, this is an urgent and pressing problem in the US. Not as much in Oregon, but obviously for the plaintiffs who are suing, they've been harmed, right? They've had part of their bodies removed, they've had their bodily integrity violated, their sexual autonomy violated. And these are all things I think Oregon is already squarely behind. We're just giving the state of Oregon an opportunity to address this important oversight that's been overlooked, right?
Okay, so sometimes the rationale of health is used to justify circumcision. And just coming back to that, what are the impacts of circumcision psychologically or sexually? What is the downside to losing 40% of your sensitive tissue?
Well, psychological and sexual effects, they may be different, but we've done studies on babies who've been circumcised and those who remain intact and are kept intact. And what they found is the babies who've actually undergone this excruciatingly painful amputation at birth, they have far more adverse reactions to painful stimuli like 6, 7 months later, which suggests that their neurology, the way, or let's say the way that their brain is structured, permanently changes in how they perceive pain. Right. And the painful stimulus was a vaccine because, you know, it hurts, but it's not like having the most erogenous part of your body amputated. Right. So what we've seen psychologically is, you know, it likely changes how you perceive pain. We've also done studies where it shows that it impairs the bonding between the infant and the mother because this infant just undergone extreme stress and trauma. So, and then if you just kind of think of it colloquially, if you have two puppies from the same litter and you abuse one and you love the other, the abused puppy is not going to come out the same, right? It's going to be more reactive and defensive and likely violent. And that's what we're doing. We're abusing our children. We're cutting off large parts of their sex organ at birth. I mean, it's like one of the most, it's practically unbelievable, right?
It is. So, what do any studies show a correlation between circumcision and male violence later in life?
Well, you know, if we look at the most violent parts of the world, the Middle East is an entirely genitally mutilating country. Certainly both sides of the Israel-Gaza conflict, right? And America as well. We're one of the biggest warmongers out there. Actually, there's been less wars recently, but, you know, Ukraine and Russia, I guess, don't fall into that. So, you know, I can't talk about the like broad scale. I think colloquially, you can see. Like certainly there's a lot of violence that overlays on genital cutting cultures. I've seen a study where I think 24 of the 26 or some 90 plus percent of genocides, there was one genital cutting culture on the side of it, if not two, right? So, you know, I would certainly believe that if you're gonna, if, because it is a form of mass hysteria, right? You could say genocide is as well, like mass murder of individuals. Well, the mass genital mutilation of children, that's a form of mass lunacy, right? It's a It is a violent act that really violates an individual that is done on a mass scale. Now, the reason it continues is ignorance, not malice, in the United States. And that's why, that's one of the reasons these type of litigation challenges are so important. It brings to light these things that are concealed.
But when it started in the United States for Gentiles, this is what I read somewhere. Is this true? Like in the late 1800s, we had the birthing of psychology and psychiatry. And there was this theory that was widely accepted that masturbation led to personality disorders, and that circumcision would reduce the tendency to masturbate. Is there any truth to that?
That's why circumcision became popular in the United States. In the late 19th century, early 20th century, they thought masturbation, onanism was the medical term.
Onanism, right.
All manner of physical and mental illness. And they looked at patients in medical hospitals, and they used that term, you know, hospitals. They were essentially prisons for people who are on the spectrum. You know, they would see that sometimes they would masturbate in their cells. They say, I knew it. The masturbation causes the mental illness or whatever, you know, physical illness. And the reality is, obviously, we know that's not true nowadays, but that's why it became so popular. And also, it's harder to masturbate if you don't have a foreskin, because that's where all the mobile tissue is. And that's why America, usually as a euphemism in pop culture, has like lotion for masturbation. Europeans don't need lotion because they're intact, right? They have this mobile skin system that stimulates itself and the head of the penis. So the penis is intelligently designed by evolution. Every mammal on the planet, male and female, has a foreskin. This is an important tissue, and it was removed historically because they knew it was important, right? That was the purpose of removing it, was right, to blunt your sexuality, make it more difficult to masturbate. And obviously, we don't want to do that to children anymore, but we are. We continue to do that. And that's why we're looking to stop this behavior.
Right, right. So do you ever consider the impact that your campaign might have on the lotion industry? I mean, this could be hard for them.
Yeah, I agree. And the lubricant and the erectile dysfunction industry, which are all disproportionately represented in the United States.
Wow. That's interesting.
And for a reason, because we remove important parts of the body and then we try to use synthetic replacements, right, which don't do as good a job. Well, I think the moisturizing companies and industry, they'll do just fine if the products were used for, you know, what they're intended for. Right. You know, I still use moisturizers and whatever. A lot of people do. You know, there's plenty of demand, and you could still use it even if you're intact, but it's not needed. Right. It's not it's way, way easier to, let's say, have a sexual experience if you have your entire penis.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that one of the speakers at your upcoming conference next weekend, March 29th, 2025, one of the speakers is talking about the dangers of cultural conditioning, which makes me want to ask the question, why don't you challenge religious circumcision?
It's an excellent question.
So that's cultural conditioning.
Yeah. Well, that's an excellent question. That's Deborah Ishagi, and she's a friend of mine. She also runs a civil litigation firm in Los Angeles. And I've actually had her on my live streams to talk about this. But the reality is, I grew up in a Jewish household. She grew up in a conservative Jewish household, right? Which is far more intense. It's not Orthodox, like, you know, because the Orthodox good section in New York, they'll, after they cut the baby, they'll literally put the bleeding organ in their mouth and suck on it, right? That's a thing in New York. But conservative Judaism, they don't do that. And I'm not making this up. I know it's hard to believe. Conservative Judaism, though, is very, very adherent to culture and tradition. And the reality is, the way that our American system is set up, you have a constitution, right? And then you have federal constitution covers all laws. Then the state constitution covers the laws in that state, right? And then, so you have a state constitution, then you have state laws, and you have, you know, local municipal laws. And each law needs to comply with the foundation. Yeah. And so when you look at a state constitution, it has both, you know, prohibition on discrimination of sex, which is what we're relying on, right, in Oregon and other states to be determined. But they also have freedom of religion clauses, right? And so if you're going to challenge the genital cutting, the genital mutilation of children, because you know it manifestly harms children and violates their right to bodily integrity, all that
It's a
good stuff.
violation of human rights.
Yeah, no question, right? And also violates the infant's religious rights, because look, I'm Jewish, but I had no chance would I sign up to this like baby mutilating, you know, schema on myself or my children, right? So I wasn't able to express that religious belief
Exactly.
because that was violated from me. Now, that's a great argument and something we'll run with, but let's protect the 98% of boys or more in Oregon who we can protect. Because if we start looping religion into this, then we have to overcome two constitutional provisions. It's much harder. And all of the organized support is going to come from a small group of people who believe that God requires them to mutilate their infants, right? It is, you can't debate with that. You can't argue with it. Now, obviously we can debate and argue in court, but we could totally sidestep the issue and say, look, if you want to mutilate your infant because you have some deity who commands the blood sacrifice of a child, well, that's your thing and we'll deal with it later. But for the vast majority of individuals whose parents don't have some like obscene belief that God requires baby mutilation, well, let's protect them because we can. And so that's really where we're coming.
Okay, that makes total sense. Okay, so now, current laws in Oregon protect girls from genital cutting but leave boys unprotected, which is a violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. And that's the basis of your lawsuit, right?
Correct.
Okay. Well, what do you think the odds are that you're going to win this case? I mean, it's so interesting that it should be any contest at all.
Yeah, well, I think it's a no-brainer, right? And if you read the complaint, and I hope you will, even the first two pages kind of gives you the gist of it, but it's like 55 pages, right? And it's got an incredible body of academic, medical, ethical literature. The entire, let's say, medical and academic and ethical community is behind protecting children from male genital cutting. There hasn't been a debate on that in well over 40 years. So any secular analysis and reasonable analysis would yield, look, you got to protect all sexes equally, all children equally. And what we're seeking, well, there's a few remedies we're seeking, but one of them is just simply a judicial declaration that the law in Oregon fails to equally protect all children. And if we get that declaration, and I think it's very reasonable, and it might go up to an appellate court, right? District or the trial court might say, the circuit court might say, look, you know, great question of law, but I deal with predominantly questions of fact. So let's kick this up to the appellate court, right? So there's a lot of ways that this could play out, but we're hoping we are reasonably optimistic that a secular trial judge will look at the facts and say, look, you know, maybe when you passed this 30 years ago, you overlooked infant boys and intersex children, but our five plaintiffs, they've been seriously harmed from this genital cutting. They're willing to testify to that harm. And this law clearly discriminates on the basis of sex.
Well,
it's literally called an anti-female genital mutilation law, right? So, I mean, come on, like this is Looney Town. And you're gonna be on the wrong side of history if you hold against it, because the entirety of society, not just America, most of other countries have moved past the genital cutting of baby boys.
Oh, that's
but even America as a whole is moving away from it. So this is where we're going and it's where we should be going.
So what about tell us about the future of possible foreskin regeneration, which I find fascinating.
Well, there's an entire multi-billion dollar industry where we use stem cells either from the individual or elsewhere to grow body parts. Could be bladders, which have been successfully implanted in patients, vaginas as a birth defect where you're not actually born with that as a female. Kidneys, hearts we're working on. So the idea that you can grow body parts from their constituent parts is not science fiction. Like it's already used in a clinical setting, right? Now, the more complex the body part, the harder it is. And it depends on what the supply and demand is as well, right? If everybody is missing a particular body part that has value, then it might be more economically viable to invest in, right? So there's at least one, maybe two companies working on trying to use stem cells to grow foreskins and regenerative medicine. And there's been some like preliminary studies, you know, I think, you know, maybe hundreds of individuals, maybe thousands, I don't know, it depends how you, you know, poll it, obviously. But the reality of the situation is the foreskin is a valuable body part. It's where most of the sexual sensation comes from. It's where all the mobility comes from, a lot of protective functions, you name it. So if people are properly informed, they'd want it back and they wouldn't take it from their children or remove it. So I think if these companies are to succeed, like other companies have succeeded, it could be a, you know, multi-billion dollar industry. But right. As a culture, I think we need to stop mutilating and cutting our kids. I think that's because that's easy. It requires moving force to amputate a part of a child, right? So let's stop that first.
Okay, so we only have about a minute left. So let's talk about the conference. Is it open for anybody to come? It's at the Sentinel Hotel. I thought that was the Governor Hotel. Maybe it used to be, but
changed name.
Oh, okay. So that's the Sentinel Hotel. It's a very classy old Portland hotel on March 29th to the 31st. So why should people come? Who should come?
Well, if you're passionate about protecting children from genital mutilation, you should be there. It's where all the leaders of the movement are going to be. It's where our first historic constitutional challenge will be filed. Right now, we only have 4 tickets available. We're just about sold out.
Wow.
No, there's huge demand. I'm very pleased. So, you know, and if we sell those 4 tickets, right, then, you know, I'll talk with the manager and see if we can get bigger rooms, but that's not guaranteed.
Right. I understand. Okay, great. Well, let's talk about how people can, we've basically run out of time, and I want to make sure to tell people about your website where they can get information on Intact Global, which is a nonprofit organization, or the conference at intactglobal.org/conference. And I want to thank you, Eric, for being on our show, taking the time. I really appreciate it. You're a busy guy and you're doing something super important. I really appreciate you and we're happy to have you on the show.
I'd love to be on. Thank you so much, Paulo.
And for those who may have tuned into Pathways Late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Eric Klopper, president of Intact Global. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO.FM in Portland, Oregon. And you can always listen to the podcast version for free at divination.com, that's spelled divination.com, as well as on Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel. Just look up Pathways Radio and other free podcast servers. And if you go to YouTube, give us a thumbs up and subscribe. And please feel free to forward a link to your friends. Well, this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Eric Klopper and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
I didn't mean to sound like a broken record, but you are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Listen sponsored. Now become a member now. Become a member not only because everything you hear is straight, everything you hear is the late, Everything here is great. But we also want you to become a member because we want you to get in there and put your shoulders next to the wall like we're doing. Help pay some of them electric bills, some of our toilet papers, our napkins, our portable plates, portable knives and forks. But better than that, even for the staff, the guys are working hard here at KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And this is Screaming Jay Hawkins telling you why you got to do it. You got to do it not because it's an order, not because it's mandatory, not because it's a must, but it's because this is the only place where you're hearing the right stuff. You're hearing the truth, you're hearing the good sound, and you're digging people who knows what it's all about. So pick up on a few things and lay down some of them other things and just dig KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. And remember, I said so. I, Screaming Jay Hawkins. I ain't walking, I'm talking. I'm squawking. Become a member now. Become a member of KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your dial. I'm about to sign off. Bye.